Fullview is a boutique design studio that fuses creativity with strategy to create effective graphic design for web and print. To find out more about their work and services, go to www.ful-vue.com.
Who knows the power mic come back on?
So if anybody's wondering why we don't make more podcasts, this is why. this is what most of the contents is like.
So this is absolutely bizarre. We sit down and we've just come from dinner where we spent an hour blabbing on and we can't stop. And as soon as we put the recorder on, we're struggling for things to say.
It's really hard when you've got the pressure of the recorder.
Luca, you're working at CST now.
Yeah.
How are you finding it?
It's good. You know, it's kind of life's all about sailing now. Not that it wasn't before, but even more so now. You kind of going to work designing moth masts, and then you're going home and you're thinking about moth centerboards and foils, and then you're going sailing on the weekend. So it's all about moths at the moment, which is probably an interesting...
Like life has ever been any different than you.
Yeah, but it's been good. I'm doing a lot of product development with CSD and marketing, so I'm always kind of... It's really bizarre because you kind of... I'm working for the sponsor, CSD Composites, who sponsored the World Championships. So you're kind of working for the interest of the sponsor in trying to line up a good deal or a good package in return for the sponsorship amount. You know, and you're negotiating with the IMCA world in doing that. It's kind of bizarre being on the other side of things because normally I would be on the MOT side negotiating with sponsors just like I've been when I was the New South Wales president. So you're kind of, you're on a different side of the line there.
So are you saying you're now Sith, not Jedi? I wish that would shut up. Just in case you're wondering, we're actually sitting here in the dark. The power's off for the entire couple of blocks. And that beeping noise in the background is our alarm in the Mothcast studio. It's our alarm beeping to tell us that the power's been turned off. So, sorry.
So anyway, it's been really good. I've been enjoying it, and it's good to be in the world of moths 24/7.
Well, 24/7 is right. So what, on a Friday night, most people are out not having quiet beers, maybe watching a movie, and you are...
I'm at work. Bending mast.
At work on a Friday night doing bloody bend test. You're crazy. So one of our respondents from it's actually been ages since we sat down and had a chat that's gone to air. Luca and I, we actually recorded another show about a month ago and we just weren't happy with it, so we binned it.
It was really funny. We talked about the assessment, you know, the new designs coming out in the market like that, and then we talked about the price tag, and we're probably possibly a bit harsh in some of our comments. We kind of discussed the extremely low price tag and if that's sustainable over a longer period of time. And, you know, we probably did in a sarcastic way. And when we listened to it, we thought, you know, it's probably not fair to these guys. You know, they're entering the market and...
And we don't want to sound like a complete bunch of assholes.
No, well, that's it. You know, it's a great thing for the moth pass if you can make a moth for, what was it, 13 grand, Australian or New Zealand, something like that. But... You know, it would have been an excellent thing for the class, and because we felt the vibe wasn't great, we thought let's just leave that one alone let's spin it and not fun with it. Funny enough, now is that what we were actually discussing being the price tag has now kind of it's kind of
come back to a more realistic level.
It has, you know, the price has gone up by, what is it, 5 or 6 grand, which is
I don't know the exact number, but yeah, it's gone up.
Yeah, yeah, it's gone up to the price of the foils, basically, which makes sense because they're pretty time-consuming to make, and they would have to add up a fairly large share of the boat price.
So it's interesting, like, foils everywhere is just going off everywhere. So I know you've got the new Mark II foils, you've got the Assassin foils, which are yet to be seen. I know that Mike Cook has got apparently some pretty revolutionary foils with his new Ninja in the UK.
Yeah, we don't know much about it because we're so isolated.
We know nothing.
We won't pretend that we do. We really have no idea what's happening there. So I'd love to see it.
We should get Mike on the show. So, Mike, if you're listening, drop me a line and we'll be happy to get you on and have a chat. Or maybe we should plead. Mike, can we have a chat at some point? But yeah, so there's the Ninja, but also, and then there's the Assassin foils. So there's all these new you know, next generation.
A lot of developments. Yeah. I mean, Blade Runner's been testing some foils.
Yeah, Rowan's been blogging about, you know, some new shiny rudders. I don't know exactly what's going on there, but there's obviously something happening there. John, obviously, he's got his
John's Mark coming out with Mark III foils that have been in the making for a long time.
Which we'll talk about a bit later on. But so it's all, it's like, foil, everyone's throwing everything out. Like, it's just, it's going off.
Yeah, development is just bigger than ever. Well, maybe not ever before I get slaughtered for that comment, but it's quite rapid and exciting at the moment.
Everyone's looking to try and get an edge up. Now, Chris Williams on his blog did respond against the last show that we talked about, which when we talked about the numbering of the Moth mains and how the North mains and how we thought it was a bit confusing. So, Luca, now that you're working with CST, could you please explain to me the mast numbering system for CST masts?
Look, I'd like to distance myself from this one, but...
I'm sorry. What did you say your role was again?
Look, it's not that difficult.
Because it has a history of actual product codes as opposed to marketing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very difficult because you've got... It gets confusing because you've got marketing names and you've got product codes. And it's hard sometimes to distinguish between two and what should you call it? Should you call it a product call or a marketing name? And if you've got both, people don't know which one to use. But anyway, you know, everybody knows that there was an M351, M354, and the M355. They're the current masts.
M351, that's a pretty big hand down, I think.
M351 is your world championship winning mast that John Harris used last time around. So that's sort of a burble stiffness equivalent, which...
So quite we've soft.
We've used as a benchmark as a fairly soft mast, which was the, I guess, the what's the word I'm looking for?
Okay, so...
The norm back in the day.
Okay, so I was going to say, I'm pretty simple, so let's break it into simple terms. The 351 is a small diameter version, small diameter CST mast with a bend equivalent of a burble.
Yeah, a bend and stiffness equivalent to the burble. From then on, we did the 353, which kind of... was used a little bit. It's essentially the same as the 351. It's only about a 2% stiffness difference.
Yeah.
So we didn't see the need to have something that was so close, seeing that you wouldn't just not be able to tell 2% difference on your sail. And then so anyway, you got the 351. The 354 is the next model up, 15% stiffer for guys that are
probably about 15%.
15, yeah. Guys that are probably about 75, 80 kilos, 85 kilos even. And then you have your heavy bore mast, which is the M355, which is 30% stiffer. So it's 15% increments. M355, you're looking at guys that are 85 plus kilos.
Yeah. So that's the standard.
It's a standard range of high modulus.
Small diameter mast.
Small 40 mil diameter, outside diameter masts.
So now, what's this nano stuff? Tell me about it.
Nano stuff is just new technology that CST has been working on. It's new technology of masts, technology that produces masts that are either lighter or smaller diameter. So we can go down on weight roughly 25%.
So is it a special fiber, special resin?
It's a bit of everything. It's really a matrix of all the different technologies that sort of allow, I guess, CST to produce masts that are better performing. So I'm sounding like a marketing guy here, but it really is true. It's an advancement of what was there before. And, you know, the price tag shows that as well. It's not it's your high-end product. It's not really trying to compete with your standards or intermediate or high modulus masters. It really is the leads and the best that's out there at the moment. And that's why they cost more money, and that's why we've still kept the existing high modulus range as a cheap alternative.
So it's going to be lighter for the same stiffness or lighter and stiffer?
Basically, you can either choose to go lighter for the same stiffness. So, you know, you can go 25% lighter, or you can choose to go smaller in diameter for the same weight. So we've got the Nano Extreme series, which is the 35 millimeter outside diameter masts, which is the smallest ones out there at the moment, and they are roughly the same weight as the high modular series masts, but they are, you know, they offer a reduction in windage, smaller leading edge profile, all that sort of stuff. So that's been what I've used over the last couple of weeks. And within the nano technology masks, you've we're kind of developing the product at this stage, and we've got a lot of variants, model variants. Got a lot of good guys using it. Scott's got one, Boris getting one, and Charlie McKee, that is, and Morgan Larson. You know, we're trying to get most of the top guys to use the stuff and see the benefits. And they've already got orders with us for these masks. And you know, once we figure out exactly what the market wants and needs, we will define the models we want to sell based on what the current moth guys reckon we should have.
So going nuts in the world's lead up of getting
going nuts, just developing masks. We've just made so many now. We've sold them. And every week I seem to have a different mask than I've been only 2 years.
So they work well with both the North Main and the...
And the KO.
And the KO Main?
Yeah, I haven't used them with anything else, but at the moment they work pretty well with both. You're getting to my North Main, aren't you?
No. I wasn't going to, but now you mentioned it.
Now I've tried the V10, which has been quite good. I've sort of had a bit of an input into just what I thought was...
So Rowan was nice enough to...
Yeah, well, it was great. He offered for me to try sale and see what I thought of it, and I gave him my feedback, and I think it's a very good product. It's that with some refinements will be great, and you know, happy to sort of work with them.
From memory, the head on it is huge.
It's a little bit bigger. It's a slightly different profile. It's a different material. I really like the weight reduction. You know, it's probably a kilo lighter than a KA.
It's a Technomara.
I mean, KA sales are still great. I still have an MSL 13 and 12. In fact, the 12 I love more than the 13. But you know, it's great to see two great sale makers fighting for a market.
Oh, absolutely. When it's the old, you know, Microsoft Windows versus Mac OS 10 thing. When there's two companies going head for head, and I suppose the same with Southern Spas and CST. When you have companies that are trying to, and Mark to the Blade Rider, and da 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 da. When you have two companies that are competing for a market, consumers benefit.
Yeah. So. And there's other players as well. You know, we don't really see many of them in Australia, but there's definitely the Hides.
Oh yeah,
the Hides. What else is there?
Yeah, there's
a US brand as well that I've seen. We don't really get exposed to it. Here, you know, people tend to have either a North or a KA.
Yeah.
But in Europe, there's a lot of development happening as well.
Yeah, so with that Hide sale, I remember seeing a photo of, I think it was Mike Lennon's latest sale, where the top is all like a shiny metallic.
Look good, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks really, really, really nice. So get that alfoil and stick it to your sale. Because they look really good. Apparently they're not slow. I'm not going to say they're quick because I haven't seen one for comparison, but...
Yeah, it seems that Mark Cook has done some good things, and I've just heard that his boat's very quick, so it'll be great to see the World Championships how it goes.
Even closer to the World Championships, the Europeans are on this weekend, I think. Well, depends on this case where, but the Europeans are on very soon.
Yeah, and you know...
And they're at Horsens, aren't they?
Denmark.
Not Kausens, Horsens. Yeah. People are training so hard for these world titles, and... I think Simon, being the top of the pops in the UK, I think if he doesn't have a training partner that's really going to push him along, then I think he's going to not suffer, but he's not could be better prepared. I think it's just the amount of hours I see people putting in for these world championships. It's just going to be a competition like none before.
Yeah, the class is definitely changing. You know, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and more great sailors are getting into it. And it's a bit of a privilege to compete against all these Olympians.
Yeah, I think I just don't think you're going to be able to do a one boat solo campaign anymore and be competitive. Not when you've got Rowan and Nathan, and you've got Scott trailing his boat down with doing a lot of work, tuning up work with AMAC. And
the US guys have been very strong.
Yeah, exactly. It's like if you're not working those little micro teams, it's going to be really, really hard. So I just hope that those European guys are doing the same thing, because my prediction, I'm going to put money on the table. I think probably Kevin Hall or Charlie McGee will win. Maybe Nathan. I'm splitting hairs between them, but I think it's really going to come down to those guys are just such top class sailors that the tactical racing will win over you know, boat speed. I think, you know,
I think if you're going to go for tactical racing, which I agree, will be the decider. I'd have my money on Nathan. But having said that, I think the Americans are going to do really well. I think Charlie McKee will be right up there. I think that Kevin Hall will be right up there. And, you know, it should be fantastic for the class. We've got all these fantastic sailors that are all, most of them relatively new to the moth class. And maybe by now they've kind of gotten the grips of sailing the moth.
Well, I know Charlie definitely has. Charlie landed here for service end of last year, straight off a plane, won the regatta against, you know, okay, you could argue it was a bit, you know, the conditions weren't necessarily brilliant and a few people weren't on the pace compared to what they showed at the Nationals a bit later on. But to be able to land, you still had your John Harris's, Dave Lister, Scott. So you had a lot of good guys. Bora, he had a lot of good guys racing in that regatta. He wasn't just given to him. And you guarantee he hasn't got slower since then. And at the recent warm-up regatta at the Gorge, Kevin Hall beat Charlie McKee, so...
Yeah, and you've got Morgan Larson. You've got plenty of talent there. It should be
Duncan Bergen. So they're going to... Especially if they're... there's a rumour sort of came out from the Hawaiian little regatta they had that they were doing full technical debriefing and sharing. If that's true and they're training together, it's going to be USA all the way at the Scottish Championships, I think.
I will see, yeah.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'd like an Aussie to win. But I think Rowan's going to surprise a few people. I don't think he'll beat Nathan, but he's going to be right up there. He'll be back on the money with his boat handling.
He's spending a lot of time sailing, and he's very committed. He's always been committed to his boat sailing. So yeah. He's flying out down to Sydney quite often and sailing against Scott. And it's really good to see.
So there'll be a question, Luca. Are you going?
I really don't know. It's just a tough one because financially it's not always easy. No. At the same time, the venues probably suit my weight and my, I don't know, sailing technique.
Yeah.
I tend to do better in the fresher stuff and particularly in flatter water. So if I was to pick a venue that would suit my style, it would be this one. And, I hope I would be quick enough, but it just depends. It's really hard. There's so many talented sailors out there now. It's depends on the finances.
I think if anyone was to finish top 20 in the regatta, you'd have to be happy with the result.
Yeah, I reckon top 30, mate. I don't know. There's just so many good people.
So where do you finish? Oh, top 50%. Oh, good job. You know.
Yes. It's changing, you know. It's like the lasers or something, you know. Those Olympic classes have been like that for a very long time, where the top 10 are all Olympic guys and the rest are sort of your high achievers from each state or nationals.
The only thing that I really hope it doesn't stop people like me from being wanting to sail in the class. I have a bit of concern now that there might be a danger that people look at the class and they go, holy crap, look at all these guys. They're all ex-Olympians, the top 49er guys. I can never win, which is exactly where I am. I'll never win a race. And therefore, not try. So that's one thing I really hope doesn't happen. Because, so what if you don't win? You get out there and you bash around with the guys at the back end of the fleet, and as long as you're at the same level, you have a great time anyway. So I just hope it doesn't put off some potential people by having such elite guys in the class.
Yeah, the speed differences tend to be quite big too. You know, you've got the top guys going around the course maybe in 25 minutes, and you've got the guys that are coming mid.
Well, even 1 hour. Even club racing, you guys lap me every club race.
I hope it doesn't happen, you know, because it's the case with Olympic classes, particularly in Australia, where, except for the laser's an exception, where people don't want to get into an Olympic boat because they'll be nowhere. It turns people off, and it sounds like a funny thing to say because you'd think people want to sail against the best sailors in the world. But I guess everybody wants to do reasonably well, you know, reasonably well. They don't have to win, but they want to feel like they're doing all right.
Yeah, I suppose the other really big difference is at the top end of the class now, you really have to sail 3-4 times a week. You know, particularly leading up into a big regatta, to get those skills up. So, you know, for normal kickabout people like myself that have a life, you know, you're lucky, especially winter, you know, forget going out in winter. It's time back with the family. But you're lucky to get out once a week, maybe twice, you know. I had a stint where I did probably for 3 weeks where I actually got out, you know, two or three times a week. I know that made a huge difference. So that will tend to push the gap even further. So,
huge difference to your sailing or to your family life?
No. Good point. No, to my sailing. So I just found, you know, as soon as you're putting, you know, that extra 5 hours on the water makes a huge difference. You know, yes, I still can't foil jibe, but, you know, you're getting a lot better. Like, so you get a lot more confident in the conditions you can go out in. You get more confident than when you actually make a start off the start line, you're actually going to hold with the guys as opposed to everyone just going in. Doing a horizon job on you.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's, you know, I think Marty joked, you know, Dave should be banned from going out during the week. But when I think if you ask Dave, he'd probably say he needs to go out more now just to keep up with everyone else.
Well, the only foot skips in Sydney have an unwritten rule that says that you really should not be sailing midweek and kind of training because that's not what the class is all about. It's about weekends. Weekend sailors that sort of, you know, they're not the Olympic guys, they're not professionals, they're just guys that want to go out and have a good time on the Sunday when they're sailing.
But people in our class are crazy. Rob Guff sailing on the Derwent on a weekday morning when it's freezing, I'm looking at you. Like, it's just crazy to go out in Tasmania. You might as well be sailing in Antarctica or a moth at dawn.
It's like, okay. It had to be colder.
That's crazy. You know, it's winter here, you know, what is it, probably 15 degrees and hits. I'm sitting here in the full ski jacket, like, you know, complaining about the cold. It's
you just can't swim.
So the other thing, which we talked about earlier, is Mr. Islet. What's he been up to?
Yeah, well, this pause that we just briefly mentioned at the start of this is the latest thing that's come out of the Fast Craft Factory. It's been good, you know, he's worked with a designer/aeronautical engineer over the last 2 years and developing these foils. And quite frankly, I don't know all that much about them. I'm not really involved in developing this, so I kind of know what John tells me. And they're coming out. There's people would have seen photos of the rudders. The centerboard mold has been finished, and that's in the process of getting made as well, and all the verticals are made, so it's really good. You know, I think John really needed desperately a new set of foils sooner rather than later, and you know, these are pretty good. I think the idea of two pieces is very good. You know, you can sort of try different things, and a lot easier to transport, obviously, and that's what all the other manufacturers so far have done. And a couple of other little things, you know, there's slight moving parts within these foils. There's fairings in the flaps that are quite neat. I think they'll be good. You know, I'm just itching to get a set. You know, I should sort of get in the next couple of weeks and then just try them against my current set of foils, and I think we'll know pretty quickly if they're fast or not, and I hope they are.
But can they be used for jumping? You know, I couldn't let a show go past without some reference to Doug Lord.
They're designed for water.
Designed for keeping the boat going as fast as possible with a straight line under control.
Yeah, designed to be in the water, not out of the water. But I think a lot of work went into it. So for John's sake, I really do hope that they are quicker.
Yeah, I think so too. John builds a great boat. I think there's a really big perception thing that prowlers aren't quick anymore, but they're still a great boat.
It's really crazy. I see these boats there on the net. Like, my old boat still, which I haven't got anymore, is on for sale for $13,000 Australian, and I just cannot believe that it hasn't sold yet, because it's a genuinely fast boat. It's not because I'm particularly fast, it's because it's just a fast prowler. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just like any other prowler.
It's dry, it's dry,
it's light, it's got no cracks, and for $13,000, I think it's an absolute bargain. Because it will compete with any Blade Rider XL boat. I don't think it's any slower. It's durable. There's just nothing wrong with it. And yet,
it's still there
for $13,000. It's with a trailer, I think. It's ridiculous. It kind of wonder why people are bypassing these fantastic second-hand boats in Australia. I don't know about the US. Maybe the European market's a little bit better and people are buying boats over there, but the Australian market is pretty bad at the moment.
Yeah, I think I know there's a few people who have definitely bought Assassins. Like I know we're having one full-time, I think, coming to the club.
Yeah, there's a 60-foot skiff guy that's coming in, which is good to see. The Assassin is an interesting package now. You know, with the price increase, they're still cheaper than the Prowler, or Zero, I should say, and obviously cheaper than the Blade Rider. So they're giving you a carbon boat for not much money. It's great for the class. It's great for Assassin, probably, as long as there's enough margin in it, yeah.
I like my 4DX. I'm sorry. I like my 4DX.
I like my 4DX too.
And the thing with I can with this point about 4DX, I built a boat without a 4DX. when I first built my last boat, I built it, you know, 18 style cockpit going right through to the bow, and I just, after a while, I didn't like it. Put a 4DX on it, I was much, much happier. So I'm not just saying it for aesthetics. I've actually built a boat without one. So, you know, I think I have the right to say I don't like 4DX because I've built a boat without one.
I've seen a boat without a 4DX. I hope that gives me the right to say that as well.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. There's something about the aesthetic of having, you know.
I don't know. I agree. I think the boats just don't look right without a 4DX, even though it probably makes more sense not to have one because you sort of don't need it.
Yeah, you know, like there's a theoretical, like a windage advantage by not having one because, the you know, there's less windage.
It's less windage, less weight.
Although, one thing I have to...
If you're going to be sensible, you'd say no foil, but...
There is one other non-moth-related foil I want to get your opinion on. The Mirabad. You know, you've seen this thing? You haven't seen one? Come on, you got it, Anarchy. There's the 18-foot skiff. The tubular thing.
Oh, right.
The foiling, you know, the 18-foot skiff that isn't a 19-foot skiff. You know.
I think there'd be more drag off all those tubes than a hull.
It's an interesting.
I think it'd be horrendous, the drag coming off all those tubes. But I think it's also a bit of a, I don't know, I mean, great to see it, but
different.
Geez,
it's different.
How much time do you reckon it would have taken to eliminate all those tubes together?
Oh, well, probably quicker to make a hull.
It's pretty. They've got the attention.
Yeah, I think if
had they had a hull, we wouldn't be talking about them.
That's right. It's like,
so yeah. There you go.
That's very true. I think that was one of the key goals, was, you know, push the limits and get people talking. But it's different.
Yeah,
it's different. I like my hulls. I think
you like your hulls and you like your 4DX.
I like my 4DX. I like my hulls. You know, don't like my cheap bar. It's all good fun. So you're picking Nathan for the Worlds.
I think Nathan's an extremely talented sailor. I think he makes very few mistakes, and I think technically he's brilliant. He's really, really good, and I think it's a privilege to sail against him. You know, he's done the Olympics, he's arguably should have won a gold medal there. Arguably.
yes.
But, you know, he's had more time in the boat now, and he's got a reasonably fast package, fast enough to win, so... So, yeah, I think he's the pick.
One other subject that sort of came up a little bit was moth top speed. The whole GPS top speed thing.
Yeah. I have a problem with peak speed.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I have a problem with that because I've had a peak speed of 47 knots on my moth, and then the next peak speed from that was like 37, and then from there it was like 32. And then there was one at like 26, well, and then 24, 23. So you kind of go, well, 26 is probably a peak as well. Like, that's probably an error. So you get rid of that one, you play 24 as a top speed.
Okay, being a geek, you can tell. So in GPS Action Replay, which is the software most people use, you can get a list of your data points, and you can sort, and you can actually find the peaks.
You can find a spot.
And it's fine to take them out. I think, for me... I would love if when people claim a speed, they actually post the trace, so you can actually download the trace file and you can actually analyze yourself. I think it's a lot more transparent. But I think it's a case of you've got to look at not just the peak, but the averages below it. So if, for example, it was like 20, 21, 22, 28, then you'd say, no, it's not a speed. But if you look at Rob's top speed run, it's all right in that ballpark. It's all 26.9, 27, 26. So I've got no doubt that Rob...
It's going to build, you know. It's going to be 26.1, 26.2, and then you get top speed at 26.4.
Yeah.
You know, it builds slowly and over time, and you get sort of higher and higher. You don't jump from 25 to 27.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason why it's taken so long to break the record. So what I want to do talk about is, and I won't use names, but there was a certain person at St. George that went out one day with, in a stinking westerly, I think it was?
Northerly.
With a goal of trying to go as fast as he could.
With two GPSs?
With two GPSs on
with
the boat.
With two completely different
with two completely different GPSs on the boat. This person did break into the 28 knot barrier.
On one GPS?
No, 20. He didn't get the record.
I think he did on the velocity, but not on the
ground. Didn't get. Was anyone near the record? But chopped it into that magic zone of, you know, the magic 28 zone. But yeah, it's like, and then that had the biggest crash I've seen in a long time. What Joao threw that peak speed, had to swim 3 mast lengths back to the boat after he got thrown off it. But yeah, the GPSs both had readings that were, one was 0.3 different. So the Garmin, I think, was higher. So the displayed speed on the Garmin was 0.2 of a knot different than the actual GPS action replay peak speed for the same device.
Right.
And then the Velocitech was different again by another 0.2 on the readout, and the display was different. The track was different again.
It was at least half a knot at the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, because the GPSs, they read at 2 second intervals, so they record the data at 2 second intervals. So it depends on, and the 2 seconds is a long time when you're doing 28 knots in a moth. So that's where that error comes. That difference that error comes from. It comes from just
you can see it when you're sailing into a lull. And sometimes, you know, you'll be doing 15 knots at a point, and you're sailing into a lull, and you've gone down to probably 12, and the GPS won't really show that for the next second or two.
Yeah.
So then you accelerate, and by that time you're still doing 12 knots, and you're now up to 15.
Yeah. So we've rambled on, but the question where I wanted to ask you is, how fast, so GPS peak, how fast do you think we'll get up going?
I think we'll be doing 30 knots downwind the next, by Belmont Worlds.
30?
Not all the time. Like,
I think
people
will touch 30.
People will touch 30, and some people will do close to 30 most of the time.
I don't know if I agree. The reason I'm thinking of this is it's the standard, the Bugatti Veyron, okay? The car that does 400 kilometres an hour, 1,000 horsepower. It uses 200 horsepower to get to 300. It uses the remaining 800 horsepower to go from 300 to 400. So I think the similar sort of thing with the MOS, you know, the drag doubling.
Yeah.
The drag increasing 4 times, but the speed doubling.
Yeah.
So I think if our main drag component is windage as opposed to foils, which I'm guessing it might be, because again, it's just a guess, non-technical guess.
I don't think it is.
Okay, just grumble me on this.
Technical guess.
Technical guess. assume that drag is the total drag of the boat, let's just forget windage versus foils. Is then you've got to go that extra bit faster. You've got to double.
Yeah, it's a lot harder.
You've got to double the power.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
So
because your drag hasn't doubled; it's quadrupled.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a case of for someone to start setting these records, you're going to have to start going smaller rigs.
But that's what I'm
doing. Yeah, you're almost going to have to build. Okay, I want to build a boat. To do the record.
Yeah, I don't think current boats will be doing 30 knots. I think boats that are a little bit slightly different, a little bit more evolved, will be doing 30 knots.
No, I don't. Yeah, I think the club racing. So the boat that's doing a course race. So if you look at a board that's used, I don't know much about windsurfers, but I'm assuming that I think a sailboard that's used for course racing is going to be very different than a board that's used for doing speed runs.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that if you wanted to actually get if you wanted to build a boat to go in, or rig and foils to go for top speed, it would look very different to the boat that would be fastest around the course. And so for that reason...
Yeah, that's right.
So for that reason, we may not get to the... I don't think we'll get...
Well, it's always a compromise between upwind speed and lift and downwind speed. You know, you're producing... You're going maybe... what is it, 40%, 50% quicker downwind than you are uphwind. And at 50% more speed, you've probably got four times more drag or something, more lift.
Here's another question.
And more drag.
Do we want to be doing 30 knots?
Not without a helmet.
That's wicked scary fast.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole other issue, isn't it?
Yeah, because I've only just crept over the 20-knot line with my yet-to-be-developed setup and complete lack of sailing skill. I've only crept over that 20-knot line a couple of times. And, yeah, it's like for me to be thinking going one-third faster, you're scary.
I'm still not in the ballpark of Dave does. You know, Dave, I don't think many people are. What Dave does is just ridiculous. I mean, Rob Gutt seems extremely fast, but, you know, to be doing 27, 28 knots, it's just unbelievable. I've never been anywhere near that. I don't think I've done anything more than 25.
Yeah, it's just crazy, 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 crazy. The London Dinghy Show, can you remember back, I think it was January, February, when the London Dinghy Show was on?
Yeah, with the launch of the Tomahawk.
The Tomahawk.
Yeah.
What do you think about those foils?
I don't know. Does it work? Does the whole concept work?
Well,
it's very different. I mean, as a foiling boat, it didn't look particularly good.
So
it's very low in the water and had a lot of problems.
For those people who haven't seen it, this was a prototype surface piercing foiler. Now, I think the foils were actually designed for...
It's designed to ride on the water.
Yeah, the foils were designed for a completely different project. And then they were put onto this.
Oh, well, that's right.
Yeah. And the idea that the foils, yeah, they're surface piercing. So there's no wand or control mechanism. The way they actually control height is by getting up, ventilating essentially, and then dropping the boat back down. So I think off the breeze that'll probably be fine, but upwind, I'm not so sure how.
I think upwind you're meant to sail it as a foiler, and this is just like a downwind feature.
Yeah, assuming sail is a low rider.
Mm. But see, the problem is that I see is the foils are very short. So you can't lean to windward as hard. And you've probably got a fair bit of drag under the water as well because you've got these big foils that you have to ride on top of the water with later. I don't know. I haven't heard much about
no,
it.
No, so I actually see a couple of photos.
It's great to see, but it mustn't have worked, surely.
Yeah, I'm
otherwise,
sure.
And
the other foil, the other foil which we haven't talked about, is the aero skiff one. No, I'm not talking about that one. The foily niner. The 49er is sort of, it's no longer just, you know, stuff you see in the way. There's actually photos that's been seen on the net. Nathan steered it with its bow-mounted rudder and
yeah, I spoke to Julian about that. I saw him down at Bulara and I had a good chat about what the design was about and some of the problems he had. And it's a completely different concept. The one that I've seen, I don't know what the latest configuration is, but anyway, the one that I saw had a bow-mounted rudder.
Yeah, that's for the production.
Is that the production one?
Yeah. Right.
Well, anyway, I spoke to him about it, and he said, you know, it's a bow-mounted rudder. It's got a fairly small foil in the front, which is kind of midway down the strut.
Yeah, yeah.
With a trim tab, that's small foil, it's basically a canard foil, has a flap on it, which... Well, the whole foil pivots in the bow of the 49er and it has cables running down the floor to the rudder assembly, or basically the rudder box.
Yeah,
so when you move your tiller, it pulls the cables.
Yeah, so
it turns the bow-mounted rudder.
Yeah, so from the photos I've seen, there's a pulley at each back corner, and there's essentially a line that goes from a paddle on. So there's like a control arm on the front rudder. The rope each side goes up to the pulleys across and gets tied onto the tiller. So they can use the normal rudder to sail out as you need to, or sail out through the boats, pull up the normal rudder, and then the rudder just steers the bow-mounted canard.
It's very interesting. The main foil was very different too. Like, it was mounted under the flange of the 49er and the gunwale flange.
Yeah.
And yet again, I haven't seen the latest one, but the one that I saw... was very, very large foil towards the rear of the boat.
It's interesting.
Sort of a V-shaped foil, was it, I guess?
Yeah, it's, I think of it more like a almost like a box, but not really. It's hard to explain. It's definitely not a V. It's definitely not a ladder. Sort
well,
of
thing. In plane, like in top view, it kind of had a, it was a raked foil. with two vertical struts from each panel of the bike.
It's sort of like a the best way to describe it would be like it's almost like a Formula One wing under the boat. That sort of arrangement.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So two vertical struts leading out to each side of the bike, each gunnel.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was just such a completely different concept. And the main foil had also trim depths on it, which, I can't remember how they were controlled. But
I think the wand was directly off the canard on the front. So there was like a wand from the canard just kicking back.
Yeah, there was that front foil, the bow-mounted rudder, had a canard. A bit like John Arlott's canard that he had, or wand that he had in Melbourne World Championships in 2005, which was directly behind the trailing edge.
Exactly the same as a trailing edge wand.
Mm. Yeah. And it had a couple of shock cords kind of keeping it on tension. And then the main foil had these trim flaps, you know. I don't know how they were. It had cable linkages leading to the cockpit, but I don't know how.
From the photos I've seen, I'm not sure there was any sort of trim on the back floor. I could be wrong, but from the photos I saw, I only saw what I saw.
I saw the prototype boat, which had a powerboat engine behind it, so it had an outboard.
It wasn't a
standard 49er concept.
So what I find really interesting is that with the moths, we're trying to go higher. Right, go as high as possible, reduce weighted surface. The 49 is not following that approach at all. The foils are relatively short, so the boat's going to be low. So it's either going to be just be clear, or it's going to be kissing. You know, it's not going to be the boat, you know, a meter off the water like the moths do. It's going to be much lower. But then again, it's going to have a lot more power, so it's going to,
potentially very dangerous in a boat like that to be one meter out of the water, trapezing of the wing.
It's a crazy concept,
isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not saying it should be a meter off the water, but it's just, it's interesting. I think the approach, I'm not saying it's an incorrect approach, I think given the amount of power that you have in a 49er, there's probably less of a need to get up as high because you can carry more drag because you've got more power. So if the hull actually is touching occasionally, it probably doesn't matter that much because you've got so much power, you'll easily be able to get back up again.
Yeah. And it's a different thing, you know, because it is a one design class. As long as it works, then it kind of doesn't matter what it's like because they're all going to be the same anyway.
It's a bolt-on kit for the boys to play over on weekends.
Yeah, well, it is a bolt-on kit. It's designed to literally bolt on. It's been moulded around the existing 49er hull, so you just buy a set, I think, and off you go. That's what Julian was saying anyway. You just kind of convert to existing 49er. I think it's a really interesting concept. I think it's surprising that it took so long. Well, it still hasn't happened, really, for the double-handed foiler to emerge in the market.
Yeah, I've heard rumblings. I can't remember where or who, but I've heard rumblings of something going on. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point someone brings something to market. I can't remember what.
It's taken years, though. You know, like, moths were foiling back in 2000 and, well, competitively foiling in 2003 when Ryan was doing well.
Yeah, but...
First sign of foilers being able to be competitive, if not dominant.
Yeah. I think one thing you've got to be careful of, and I think this is probably... I'm thinking about a certain gentleman in Florida here. It's very easy to, if you haven't actually sailed a modern foiler that isn't one of the Hobie Trifoiler sitting. So there's a couple of classes, I think, of foilers. There's the Hobie Trifoiler rave where you sit in, boats are heavy, lots of power, they come up and they ride just above the water. I think that sort of foiling is very different than the way the moths are. And then those sort of boats, which is you're out on trapeze, you're trying to get, it's not just a fun cruise boat where, I'm up on foils, it's you're trying to go really, really fast and get the maximum performance out. I think they're very different design goals. And I think keeping those as simple as possible is really paramount. So I think there's a danger for someone who's trying to come into that market who hasn't been involved around the existing moths and things like that to just... It's the old on paper idea to just come up with something on paper that I think looks great on paper, but, you know, school of hard knocks talking here. I've built my fifth foil now. Just because it works on paper in your head doesn't mean it works in reality.
The funny thing with the 49er is that our Don actually, you know, have to be careful here because Julian Betho is 10 times more talented and, you know,
He's got more talent in his little finger than their entire club has.
Yeah, and, you know, the guy designed Olympic boats, I certainly didn't, so all credit to him. However, I can't see how it will work.
Well, it's going to work.
I can't see how a boat that bears a weight like a 49 and the bow goes down cannot fall off the foils if you've got a tiny little bow mount to foil the bow. Like, I would think that as you bear away and the loads in the bow increase dramatically, you need a fair bit of surface area in front of your mast. You know, if you've got a tiny little foil in front of the mast, on the bow, and a really, really large foil at the back, behind the mast, what's stopping the bow going down?
See, I think you're thinking in terms of racing like a moth.
But
I don't think that's the goal.
So you bear away, your boat comes off the foils.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the goal.
Is that the goal?
I don't think, from my guess, this is all just only guessing, it's like a bolt-on turbo kit for your car, right? The 49er can go sail around the course and not bury the bow or anything, no problem. This is a kit that you bolt on, then under the right point of sail, it's going to get up and go 1.5 times as fast as it would otherwise. If you think of it like that, as in a... It's not...
So it's a toy.
It's not a different configuration, but you're never going to see... I don't think the goal is to have fleets of racing, of 49ers racing. I think it's the guys that want to have fun will bolt the turbo onto their existing 49er when they're not racing in championship events.
Yeah.
And on those certain points of sail, they're going to go twice the speed they normally would.
Yeah.
If you think of it like that,
then...
Do the job.
Yeah. It'll do the job. It'll fall.
But if you think of it as a configuration for racing, which is the best configuration that it can be...
Well, to me, that would be the point, though, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be the ultimate?
You'd have to talk to the Beth Wallace.
Yeah, we're just speculating here, but I would have thought that you would design a boat that's got a chance of beating the existing 49 around the course. And then you're onto something. Then you've got an absolute weapon.
Nah. Bolt on. Go nuts.
Bolt on, go nuts. Yeah, why not?
So, yeah, that's where I reckon that's going. But, yeah, you know, I don't know Beth Wade other than reading her books, so I could be completely wrong.
We shall wait and see.
We should have a chat to Nathan about it, because he sailed the thing.
Well, I have a chat to Julian Beth Wade himself.
All that too. Go on, make it happen. Well, I think I might just do it for this show. We've got a few things planned coming future. We're going to try and get a bit more regular. Real life has intervened in the past few months, unfortunately, which is why things have been a bit slow. But we're going to try and get a bit more regular. But mind you, we've got to have...
We've got a few people lined up. We're hoping to get Chris Williams from North Sales, and I think we'll get the CSD boys on the show as well. To get Michael Cook.
Here's another thing. If you actually want to be part of the show, if you've got a question or a comment, send an MP3 file to bruce@mothcast.net and we might even put you on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've got any questions.
Comments, criticism.
Yeah, absolutely.
Send it. And yeah, if you send it as an audio file, it'll be better because we can play it.
We can play it, yeah.
Should we get it? All right, guys. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.